This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Grid Talk and happy Pride Month. My name is George Harrison and today we are here to preview the 2024 Canadian Grand Prix. Joining me today we have Grid Talk co-host Sophia Richmond.
Hi.
F1 historian Alex Booth.
Hello.
And Formula One enthusiast Mikhail Kataya.
Hello.
Everyone. So, but before we get into the episode, we must thank our sponsor for this episode, Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Every start, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head over to the website today to get in on the action. Use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Unsurprisingly, where we're going to start, Alex, is with Esteban Ocon. As we're recording this earlier today, on the 3rd of June, the news has broke that it's confirmed that Esteban Ocon will not be retained by Alpine for next year. He's been dropped. Has this come as a surprise to you, and is it the right decision for Alpine?
It hasn't come as a major surprise, considering the Ferrari over the Monaco collision between Ocon and Gasly, because I think there are even rumours that he was going to be dropped with immediate effect. So no, it doesn't come as a surprise. The fact that they've announced it prior to the summer break, in one way, is a good thing for Ocon, because it's a lot of time to get a contract sorted. But on the other hand, it's a bit of a surprise from Alpine that if that was going to be the intention all the way through, that it's a surprise that they've announced it that quickly in that respect. So one could argue that it's definitely to do with what happened at Monaco. So for the harmony of the team, it's probably the right decision. It was a very political move to have two Frenchmen in an all-French team, even though it's based in England. And it hasn't really, it's not really worked, because they collided in Melbourne last year. Ocon's got a history of colliding with his teammates. He seems like a lovely guy, but he's not a lovely guy on the track, which is as a lot of other drivers on the test too. So yeah, but he's got enough time to secure a seat for next year. And I think he probably knows a lot more than he's letting on.
Most likely. I mean, I saw on YouTube the other day, Sky Sports F1 put a compilation of Ocon's collisions with his teammates, which I thought was very apt, but I also think it was quite bad for Ocon, the fact that you could make a decent compilation of that shows you how many there's been. But yeah, definitely things going on behind the scenes. An interesting move from Alpine to do this so quickly after the Monaco Grand Prix, Mikhail. Same question to you, really. How's this come as a surprise, and who do you think's most likely to take over from Ocon next year?
Well, like Alex was saying, is it a real surprise that he's dropped this at the end after this season? No, not necessarily. When Gasly joined the team, I didn't think that they would keep both of them for too long, even though, again, all French team, I guess. I find it odd that the timing has come after Monaco, because I certainly believe that a lot of the decisions were already made beforehand. And then now that it's published like this, it stirs up even more rumors of like, oh, maybe this was the final straw or something. But in terms of who's going to replace him, my biggest assumption would be the Alpine reserve driver or junior reserve driver, Jack Doohan, just because I think he's been built very well in the pipeline and he's the primary junior candidate that Alpine has. I know there's Victor Martins, for example, in the F2, but he's been having a horrendous season, so his chances are not really increased by that. So I'm assuming it'll be Jack Doohan. I do think maybe I just find this timing weird again. So maybe there are some speculative contract news that might come. And that would suggest that maybe Alpine has signed with an existing driver and they want to publish it. But if that's not the case, I'll definitely assume it's going to be Doohan.
Yeah, it's interesting timing, like you say. I mean, I think Alpine have come out and said that the incident in Monaco's not had a bearing on their decision, which I find absolutely unbelievable. I don't know how it can have no bearing. Even if it's the case that they were looking to replace Ocon, which might be the case, I do find it hard to believe, to be honest. I think they probably would have wanted to keep, like you said, two French drivers in a French team. As long as they're, you know, getting on all right, they'd want to keep that going. But unsurprisingly, old wounds have reopened with these two because we know they didn't get on from back in the karting days. People who have watched Drive to Survive know that as well. They've explained the difference of opinion and what happened. So it wasn't a surprise that something like this happened. But yeah, it's, for my money, I think it's probably going to be Jack Doohan as well that comes into that team. And Sophia, I think you agree with that as well. You were nodding along to what Mikhail was saying. I mean, you're someone who covers Formula 2 quite a bit for our sister show. I mean, how talented is Jack Doohan and is he ready for F1?
100%. I mean, he is testing in a 2022 car shortly as well. But I mean, there is two Alpine junior drivers in Formula 2, Kushmany as well, who has also been probably more consistent over Victor Martins last season and this season as well. I think Kushmany got points every single round except for like maybe two or three races last season. So he is very much a good, consistent driver for the Alpine team. But 100%, it would be that Jack Doohan, I think, would take the seat. But going back as well, Ocon got a podium last year in Monaco. He's been a race winner as well for Alpine. So compared to, obviously, Gasly has won as well. If you look at kind of the stats, they aren't very, very, very much equal. But obviously, Ocon's had a few calls and misjudgments. And I think definitely Monaco put a nail in the coffin. But definitely there was talks before. I've seen rumors that he might even take a small contract to Mercedes because obviously he has had that connections with Mercedes over the years, as you could probably see when watching Drive to Survive. So who knows? I don't think he will get a seat in 2025, but maybe just do a short stint for Mercedes to help them for the new development. But definitely Jack Doohan will be in the seat, hopefully, for next season.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's always good seeing F2 drivers make it to F1 because, unfortunately, that's getting increasingly rare. At least it seems that way anyway. So might have taken him a little longer than what he would have hoped. But yeah, if he's in the car permanently for the next year, I don't think Jack will be complaining at that. But let us know, guys. Let us know. This is a breaking news story. It's only happened literally earlier today as we record this. So, you know, post to us on our social medias, at GridTalkUK, everywhere you can find the at symbol to let us know about that. But yeah, so let's actually talk about the race that's coming up. Canada. So, Alex, you're the F1 historian. Can you take us give us a trip down memory lane to some of the classic Canada moments? Because it's a track that's, well, it's a race that's been on the calendar for 50-odd years, and it's been at the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve for 45 or so, since 78, I think. So it's a track that's got a lot of history over the years.
Well, yeah, it's one of my favourite circuits, and it's one that I always look forward to. Canada's provided us with some classic races in the past, and certainly the memorable 2011 race, which is the longest race in history due to the stoppage, with Jenson Button ending up last and then coming to win. If you go back further than that, 2007, Lewis Hamilton's first win. 2001, the Schumacher brothers battle, and even further back, 98, which is a crazy race. There's so many incredible races there, and it still continues to provide some interesting racing, and I hope we get more of the same on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Mikhail, what are your main memories of Canada? One does jump out to me from a Finnish perspective, not a particularly good one, Kimi Raikkonen getting hit by Lewis Hamilton in 2008. I was feeling that pain as well that day. But have you got any better memories of Canada through the years?
I mean, from a Finnish perspective, I don't remember anything particularly positive. I do remember the Daniel Ricciardo's win. I think that's one of the more, I mean, I guess it's not recent anymore at this point, but it's still like one of the, I guess, more modern memories I have, especially since it was still a Mercedes dominated season, but he was sort of one of the sparkles. I kind of remember the year it was, to be honest. I would have to look that up.
14.
26. Yeah, 14. Yeah, that's probably my, honestly, the memory that jumps out the most, because I felt that the last few Canadian races just have been somewhat more boring, which is sad because it is a track layout that I like, especially doing it myself virtually.
Yeah, me too. It's one of my favorites to drive in the F1 game. I'm sure it's got nothing to do with the amount of corner cutting you can get away with. But anyway, let's move on from that. But yeah, Sophia, what are your main memories of Canada? Like Mikhail kind of alluded to there, a lot of the classic moments in Canada are actually quite a while ago. I don't really have many standout memories from the past few years, but can this year change that?
I mean, definitely. There has been changes, obviously, to the track as well. You have that new grass patch as well. But Canada's always been quite interesting because they can see how powerful the DRS is. There's really good opportunities to overtake. I mean, last year we saw Max Verstappen get Red Bull's 100th victory. Alex Albon had his highest scoring position as P7, which he also tied in Monza, I believe. Lance Stroll as well, every year besides 2018, has scored points. So hopefully that record keeps on going as well. But I mean, those are kind of my standouts from like a numbers perspective, because y'all know I like my numbers and statistics. But overall, it's just a really good race just to watch in general. So many good overtakes. I was watching the highlights from last season. There were some really good opportunities in some of the corners as well. And especially because it's shaping up to be not a Red Bull dominated season so far. We've had, what, 3 different winners so far. It definitely will show who has the stronger car, I think, when we go to Montreal this weekend.
Yeah, you rightfully alluded to it there. The fact that, you know, we've had 3 different teams and 4 different drivers win so far this year, which is about an average of 1 every other race, which when you think about it, especially with how downtrodden a lot of people after the first couple of races, is not bad at all. But Alex, we've had a couple of surprise winners in Lando Norris and Charles Leclerc at Monaco as well. Is this potentially a bit of a turning point of the season for Red Bull? Because they obviously seemed miles off in Monaco. Christian Horner was saying it was largely down to the track, but it was still a big performance gap at the end of the day. Is this a vital race for Red Bull? Is it one that you feel that they really have to win to stamp their authority on things?
I think if they don't win this weekend, then I think maybe the tide is starting to turn a little bit. I think if Red Bull go this, if Max Verstappen completely wipes the floor with everybody this weekend, then maybe we were probably getting a bit too excited too soon. And that's no disrespect to him, but obviously they know they deserve all the success they've got. But if they don't, and it's another, you know, winner that we didn't really predict from the word go, I won't say exciting race, because the last couple of races haven't been brilliant. I don't you think, but if it's an unexpected result, then we are in for potentially a championship fight, and maybe then it's not such a Red Bull walkover. But I think there's a slight possibility that normal service could be resumed.
Fair enough. Mikhail, what do you think? Is there going to be more of a normal service, with it being more of a normal track in Canada, or are we likely to see another upset with the likes of McLaren or maybe Ferrari stepping up to win the race?
I don't know. I guess eternally pessimistic. I'm assuming Max to kind of come back and like you said, stamp his authority over it. But at the same time, I did actually just pull it up, and if I'm not wrong, wasn't Fernando Alonso on second place last year actually? So it's possible that we could have some sort of a surprise at least. Although obviously Aston Martin was much better last year than this year. So maybe. I mean, I'm hoping that Charles is able to keep his streak going, but I'm expecting it to be Max's stomping ground again.
Sophia, what are you thinking? Are you thinking it's going to be 3 in a row for Verstappen in Canada this weekend?
Oh, maybe, but I was just doing a quick check as well. It's also going to see how qualifying is, because just quickly glancing over the last 5 times we raced in Canada, the top 3 has pretty much stayed the top 3 as well. So if Red Bull does not have a good qualifying, which obviously we saw in Monaco, I think that also opens the door for other drivers to come in. But even if Max wins, he'll still lead the championship. It's a 31 points gap between him and Charles right now. So obviously, if Max comes in second and Charles comes in first, like obviously the gap is still wide, but it still will get kind of close now how many rounds in. But I think all eyes will be on qualifying. Like I said, the last 5 years, the top 3 pretty much have remained the top 3, or maybe even the top 4. So also as well, it's meant to be raining this whole weekend as well. So that's also going to be quite an interesting one to see, because some of these cars do not do well in the wet performance. So it's going to be cold. It's actually the coldest day the whole week on Sunday race day as well. So that's also another factor that we've kind of not really seen over the recent years as well. So it should be a good race weekend for sure.
Yeah, you beat me too there with the weather forecast. I just looked it up as well, and it looks very, very British. It looks very, very dull and rainy. Cold by F1 standards, I should preface that, because, yeah, mid-20s and low 20s is actually quite warm over here in this part of the world, but by F1 standards, that is quite cold. And, yeah, as we've seen in races like Alex alluded to before, like 2011, it can absolutely throw many, many spanners in the works, and we'll have to see what happens with that. But then again, if anybody's good in the wet on the grid, it's the likes of Max Verstappen and Sir Lewis. They're the 2 that kind of jump out to me. But Alonso's great qualifying last year is definitely a reason for optimism. Although, I'm with you on that one, Mikhail. I don't see it really happening again this year without Aston Martin, unfortunately. But yeah, so I wanted to talk about the rules in F1. And this is a bit of a this is a bit of this is a callback to Monaco and also kind of a looking forward to potentially a race maybe like Singapore later in the season. I don't think we're likely to see the exact scenario of what happened in Monaco again, but we had obviously in Monaco we had a lot of guys hitting or change their tyres, I should say, during the red flags, and that allowed the majority of the field, from what I could see, especially the front runners, to do essentially the entire race on one set of tyres, bar one lap. Alex, this is a circuit where we've seen a lot of red flags over the years and safety car restarts and everything. Is it potentially a time for F1 to have a look at maybe changing that rule? Because, see, unfortunately, I think it really affected the Monaco race in a negative way.
Well, it certainly did. Yeah, there's absolutely no denying that. I mean, you know, I love the Monaco Grand Prix. I always have done, always will. I've stood up against it time to go. And I certainly don't think it is. I think it still deserves its place on the calendar. But I do agree that the tyre rule really played a part. And I think it's preposterous, to be honest. You know, we had drivers going at pace, which was pretty much on par with F2. That should never happen in Formula 1. There's no excuse for it. And yeah, I think that needs to be addressed immediately. And something should be done about it. And I also think, even looking forward, I think putting in a mandatory second pit stop or something like that, because trying to do the whole race on one set of tyres just is... I don't particularly like it when things are put in purely for entertainment, because I understand it can get a bit gimmicky, but you have to draw a line somewhere. And this constant tyre management, it is just not entertaining. It's just not, you know, fun to watch at all. It's just taxi driving. You know, something needs to be done about it, I think, just to improve it.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a change.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That, to be fair, like you said, going the pace was just, it was not good between the front four or so, especially towards the end. Yeah, not very entertaining. But Mikhail, is this something that you think that needs to change as well? Is it mandatory second stop just for Monaco, for example? Is that something that kind of needs to happen to allow the race to move with the times, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the second mandatory piece, but I mean, there is obviously there is precedent just for FIA to make special rules for Monaco, just not for F1, but I mean F2 qualifying is split between two groups for the, you know, sake of there not being too much traffic and blocking. So of course there is always room to make it special, and I think if they are to address anything with rule changes, I would prefer if it was more done tailored with, let's just keep it in Monaco. I mean, I know you mentioned Singapore, and to be fair, there are legitimate arguments to also make some changes with Singapore, but I think especially with Monaco, with the lack of, with even worse opportunities to overtake than in Singapore, I just feel like it would make sense. If we are doing something, then let's do it for Monaco first. Because I'm thinking, because the specific rule with like changing tires during the red flag, it's been controversial once before. I remember in Monza some years back when we had a red flag, and then you had some cars that were just, again, drivers waiting and hoping for a safety car pit stop, and then they get an even better luck because they get a red flag pit stop where you don't lose any positions or any time. And to be honest, I was even surprised with Monaco because I thought that the rule with the tires is that you have to drive one full lap with your tire compound before it counts, but it's just the fact that you're using it, you can already pit basically. So I don't know, maybe you could look into that, because I mean, F2 has the same, the rule of like not pitting under a virtual safety car, although it did end up still deciding something last weekend. But yeah, I am in favor of it, but I would rather just do it for Monaco, because I guess for Monaco, you know, you could allow a bit more gimmicky things than for the whole season, I guess.
What do you think, Sophia? Do you think we should have a special rule for F1 in Monaco? Mikhail rightfully referenced there that qualifying for F2 and I think F3 as well is different. It's completely unique because it's a completely unique circuit. And it is a unique circuit because it's the only one that doesn't run to the full Grand Prix distance, for example. And, you know, if you were to suggest Monaco, it's been said lots, but if you were to suggest Monaco as a new race this year, it'd never pass. It's only on the calendar because it's Monaco. Rightfully so. I'm with Alex on that one. It is rightfully there. It deserves its place. But the amount of complaints that are coming in from the fans, it's a bit concerning, especially when Liberty have said, I don't want to say this openly, but they have reportedly said that they don't need Monaco. If they want to get rid of it, they will do.
Which I don't agree, because that is Triple Crown. There is drivers who still want to do Triple Crowns. It is one of the most iconic races. However, like, with the pit strategy, there's no way to really overtake, especially with how big these cars are now, these F1 cars in Monaco. It's not built for it. So it comes down to the pit strategy. I agree with maybe not getting the tire change under red flag, but under safety car, I kind of agree, because like Michaela said, we've seen a few times where drivers will pit under safety, not thinking you'll go to a red, and then they've lost so many positions, and then the drivers will have the free opportunity to change it in the red. I remember, I think it was like Lando Norris that had a really big kickoff about that, because he literally just pitted right when it turned to red, and he lost so many spots in that race. So I 100% agree. I mean, even, like, it is difficult to say, and obviously it depends on what circuits are one-stop strategies. If it is a circuit that might have 2 to 3 stops, I can be kind of more lenient. But again, it's, if we want to do something specific for Monaco, like we do for F2 and F3 with qualifyings, that makes more sense. But then we have to look at, is there any other tracks that also can be a one-stop strategy? Also, as well with the tires, I mean, it can go even to IndyCar rules, potentially, which is they have to do one lap in order to switch off to counter for the regulation. So doing the hard tire for one lap and then moving to the soft. And then again, you also have to think about degradation. You have to think about how the track is as well and how the rubbering, especially again, Monaco is a street circuit. It is open during race weekend. People are driving around like right after the races. So that also has another big factor to it. But I agree not allowing change of tires to be allowed during red flag, but I do agree with safety cars, especially if it is a more than one pit stop race.
Yeah, I think safety cars fair enough. And yeah, it is a bit strange how, you know, the F1 guys don't even have to do a lap. Some of them didn't even do a sector. And specifically, you know, referencing that, Alex, when I was watching it live, I was very confused as to why or what was going on in terms of like Carlos Sainz being allowed to restart from his old grid position. And to my understanding, and again, this is really complicated, which is the part of the problem. To my understanding, the whole reason why he was allowed to do that was because Zhou Guanyu got caught up in that 3-car pileup at the back of the field and wasn't able to finish the first sector. So because of that, the grid was allowed to reset. If Zhou passed through the first sector line, which he would have done, I think, 5 seconds or so after he actually did, it was very close, then Carlos Sainz wouldn't have been allowed to restart, and it would have had to be a rolling safety car start, I think. So the point is that these restart rules are really complicated. I think this is something else that potentially needs to get looked at, because, again, this is kind of is likely to be a race where we're going to get quite a few of those.
Well, this is why I didn't want you to call me the F1 expert anymore, because I'm not really sure how that now. I can give you a fact that if we go all the way back to 1995 at Monza, David Coulthard spun out on the formation lap. Now, that would have automatically made him out of the race as a starter. But there was an accident on the first lap and the race was stopped and restarted. And because it was declared null and void, he was allowed to start for his pole position again. So rules have been there, you know, the rules in that respect have been around for a long time. I wasn't aware of the science being able to start in third again because of the incident with Joe Grand, you have to forgive me. I didn't actually watch the race, so I'm just trying my best to. But so I would have assumed that he could have been able to start in the third anyway. That's my understanding. I apologise if it's not cutting edge. But that was my understanding. One thing I did want to add, though, with regards to the last question, and Sophia alluded to this, I think with all the criticism of Monaco, I think the size of the cars and the titles needs to be addressed first before we discuss Monaco. And that's the main thing, because they're just ridiculously big. And not just for Monaco, for anywhere.
They are, yes. And to their credit, the FIA are actually looking at this. It's being discussed in the Concorde Agreement. They're going to make the cars have a shorter wheelbase and be, I think, 10 centimetres narrower as well, which will help. But yeah, they are the size of, I can't remember, sorry, I think it was either Wayne or Tom on the Monaco review, but they are, in terms of the profile of the floor, the size of a Maybach, it's just the only thing that sets them apart is the fact that they're so low. But their actual profile, their actual space that they're taking up, like, you wouldn't be able to fit it in a regular car parking spot here in the UK. And that's a cutting-edge Formula One car. So it seems very, very odd for sure. I mean, I was all for making the cars bigger and more aggressive and faster and everything in 2017. But now I look what it's done and I think, did we really need to do this? But yeah, so Mikhail, I'm gonna ask a similar question to you. I apologize if it's a difficult one to answer, but something going further back, if we go to Australia last year, I think Karun Chandhok was furiously going through the rule book to figure out what was going to happen at the third red flag restart, and he couldn't figure it out, and he had literally the rule book in front of him. So again, do things kind of need to be simplified for the fans to understand? Because like we've all watched F1 for years, and the fact that we can't immediately go, oh yeah, this is going to be a safety car restart. Oh, he's going to reset. It's going to still go on the grid. The fact that we can't do that, it's just going to turn people off who aren't as familiar with the sport.
That is true. Although I will say with this specific case of Australia, I don't think we can write the rule book to be so specific as to what happened in Australia to actually dictate in all of those situations. But what happened in Monaco should be expected to happen in Monaco. So there should be quite a clear way to make the decision on it. I do think specifically with what happened in Monaco, I don't necessarily hate how it ended up being dealt with, because when it comes to like a first lap crash or in general something like this, one of the issues that came to mind, at least to me when I was listening to Alex also talk, is the fact that, for example, with the decision of how we did now, because Zhou couldn't pass the first sector mark, that's also down to just the humans at the in the FIA sort of deciding when to put the red flag. So if we had a rule, let's say, that decides that specifically on the moment where the red flag is flown, that is the new order for a new restart, for example. Well, yeah, but then that's down to when do you press the button, because someone might be doing like just throwing a lunge and then just be a few centimeters ahead at the right moment. And then we have this kind of a rule where you can sort of reset the grid to the best of your ability, because not everyone who's still in the race was able to finish the first sector. At least that kind of removes a bit of the human side of things. So if we wanted to make it completely, you know, how would you say this, like completely, I guess, fair and without like that sort of human error to it, I guess we should make the rule that if there is a crash and then red flag is flown at any point because of that crash, you restart the order, whether it's a rolling start or standing, that's a different thing, but you make the order be what it was at the exact moment of the crash. But then it of course comes to the question of like, where do you draw the rare specific, which millisecond did the crash happen? But I think that would be something that you could make as a change to clarify things. It would still confuse everyone, but that's kind of how red flags are always. It's just, there's so much stuff that happens, but that it just confuses people anyway in the moment. But I guess that would be something to kind of clear it out at least.
What are your thoughts, Sophia? Is this the nature of the beast, or is it something that we could actually help?
I think it's just Monaco. That's the thing as well. Like, it is, red flags are thrown so quickly and more often in Monaco than any as well, just because of the nature of the track. Again, it is narrow. There's no time to kind of change. If you go off, there is no off track. You hit the wall and that's it. So obviously it is a bit difficult to say. I mean, with the red flag call, like, I don't agree that Carlos should have started P3, especially again, and I'm going to keep on saying it, it is Monaco. The top 10 for the first time ever finished how they qualified. Like, it is not an opportunity to overtake track. Had it been another track where overtaking is allowed, okay, I would say that's fine. Carlos still stays P3, but it's a track where how you start qualifying is how you're going to finish. That, and especially because a lot of these drivers had opportunities to overtake. I think Yuki moved up a few places, like a few of the drivers moved up a few places, before the red flag was shown, and then it was all for nothing as well. Obviously, Ocon and Gasly's situation as well, even though moving up places and subsequently causing damage, there was a lot of drivers that were able to make some headway at the start, which is something you don't see again in Monaco. So to do all that and then go back to how it was, it made it really boring. But again, how will you know as well? Throw in mini sectors, but even again, it's a short track and just timing. And then obviously, like Mikel says, when does the flag get flown as well? Like, is it straight away? Is it maybe a couple seconds later? What's the process? And the thing is with rules as well, having worked in other sports as well, it's very difficult to create rules that also can be blanketed, but also in specific situations. Like, obviously you mentioned Australia as well. Like, there's no kind of historical record that you can base it off of. So you're never going to get a definite answer. You're never going to actually be like, this is the perfect situation according to the rules, because there has been no other opportunity that this has happened for. So you're not going to please everybody, especially when it comes to the FIA and how they like to rule. But it's chaotic. But again, I don't think we would ever see this happen in another race to an extent like what we did last weekend, 2 weekends ago in Monaco.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for sure. It's definitely tough for the rule makers. There's a reason why that rule book is so long, because it has to cover so many different scenarios and all this, that, and the other. So it's not easy. It's not easy for sure. But I've really enjoyed the discussion on that. And if you've enjoyed it as well, you can head over to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review on those. We really do appreciate it. And if you're one of the 72% of the people that are not subscribed to our YouTube channel, please consider helping us out with a like and subscribe on those. We normally go out live after the races themselves. This is a pre-recorded show, but you can join us on the live chat as well on the YouTube channel when we are reviewing the Canadian Grand Prix in a few days' time. So with all that covered, let's get into some predictions. So Alex, I want to hear who's your pole prediction, your podium prediction, and a bold prediction as well, please.
See, my bold predictions and the actual predictions tend to be the same, but I'll do my best. For pole, I'm going to go Leclerc, because he's a very good qualifier. We all know that. And the Ferrari has been quick. So I'll go for Leclerc pole. He'll pit Verstappen and maybe Norris third. Head will say Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez podium. And a bold prediction. Well, I've just worked out in my head. I can think of 5 drivers who've taken their first victory in Canada. Oscar Piastri will make that number 6.
Hey, my man. That's what mine was going to be as well. I would love to see Piastri get a win. It's been coming, to be fair. He's shown some incredible pace for sure. So, Mikhail, what's your top 3 pole and the bold prediction, please?
Well, I think the forecast is going to make it, I guess, a bit more interesting. The pole, I'm just going to give it to Max, because I still, even with rain, I would never bet against him. So I'm just going to say Max on pole. But then for the podium, well, Max is not going to be that exciting of a guess, but I would go for, I'm going to say Max, Lando, and Sir Lewis Hamilton in that order, which would be nice for the British, all of the British viewers and listeners of the show. And then, my wild. I'm going to say Aston Martin in double points, you know. Has been a bad season, but I'm going to say it's again Lance Stroll, like Sophia already alluded. Strong at home, relatively strong at least, and then I think Alonso will be back, especially with the rain, so I'm going to go with that.
I could definitely see that. Their form recently has been pretty bad, but really they should be in the top 10, both of them. But we'll see. Lance Stroll especially is far from reliable. Sophia, what's your pole, top 3, and pole prediction for this weekend?
So pole, Max, podium will be Max, Oscar, and Lando. Got us with the papaya, the McLarens. My bold is very similar to Mikel, but I say Lance Stroll's going to finish in top 5 this time. Instead of being just on the cusp of points, he's going to solidify himself right back in the middle of the points.
She's going all in with that bold prediction. I like that. That's spicy. That is very brave. And Sophia, if people want to hear some more predictions, some more spicy predictions from you, they can head over to Formula Talk.
Yeah, I hosted along with Tom Downey as well. We cover Formula 2, Formula 3, occasionally IndyCar, Formula E. Pretty much you can find us on the same socials as Grid Talk, but we also have our separate YouTube channel this season for season 2 of Formula Talk, and you just search Formula Talk on YouTube to find us. We'll have a few episodes coming up. Obviously, we've not really covered IndyCar yet, but we will be doing that and some of the mid-season reviews as well while we're in a bit of a break coming up to the summer season as well for F2 and F3.
I'm looking forward to it as always. And if you guys want to hear and see more from me, you can head up to my website, footballchronicle.com. That's football spelled Spanish ways, F-U-T-B-O-L. Or you can head over to the Chronicle's many video channels as well. We cover football, F1, IndyCar, everything in between, really. So if you want to hear my opinions on everything, I've already done one on Ocon and why he's essentially been let go of by Alpine and why it's not that big of a surprise and who's likely to go there. You can head over to our channels on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, from Facebook, and of course Microsoft Start too. But yeah, if you want to hear more from Grid Talk, we're available on YouTube, where most of the episodes are recorded live. This is not one of them. This is a preview, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Apple Music, Verbal, Pocket Cast. Just search for F1 Grid Talk and all those platforms to find a big pack catalogue of shows. Now, I've lost count of how many episodes we've done, but it's north of 300. It has to be. Heading for 400, most likely, if we've not already passed it. And yeah, please consider supporting the show on Patreon as well if you want to support us financially. You can get some better lights, mics, and recording equipment. It will be nighttime when we record the Canadian Grand Prix race review. That'll be going out 10 p.m. UK time on Sunday, so please catch us for that one. And yeah, I want to thank my panelists for joining us as always. It's been a great discussion.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for listening and watching the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bets Online, and goodbye.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.